Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Hope you clones had a great weekend. We had a nice show to start the week. We covered a lot of ground. Bleacher Report's Howard Beck came in. He broke down the NBA playoffs and how LeBron and the Cavs managed to blow Game 3. Plus, New York Times reporter Tyler Kepner was excellent. He talked about Mike Trout's historic start to his career and the fast start that the Yankees have had this season, too. The Cavs letting Boston back in, the NHL playoffs, and you clones doing your best to bring me down with some Denzel smack and that rogue sea lion. All of that and more. Sit tight. Here it is. Alvy, do it. My thoughts first on last night's game, Cavaliers and Celtics. Thoughts being, what a difference one game makes. 48 hours after one of the biggest beatdowns in NBA postseason history, a game where the Celtics never led, were down 41 at halftime, and by as many as 50 overall, they go into last night's game without their best player and their leader, Isaiah Thomas, and they were 17-point underdogs. That's an almost unheard-of line for any NBA game or team, much less a number one seed. And then sure enough, they go out and they play right to that line, falling behind by 21, which is good. Everybody in America was smelling sweep, and the sooner the better. Finish running these guys over, then back over them a few times, and let's get on to the trilogy and make us forget how horrible the playoffs really have been. And they have been pretty horrible. As a caller said on the show last week, can somebody not just hold up four fingers and then give the Cavaliers and the Warriors an automatic pass to the NBA Finals? After all, that's what we all want. And neither one of them are going to lose in the conference finals anyway. Hold up four fingers and get us there. One problem, nobody bothered to tell any of this to the Celtics, who are down 21 and should have been looking for a nice soft spot to lay down and die. But instead of rolling over, they just kept trying, and they wouldn't give in. Next thing you know, Marcus Smart is going heat check. Jonas Jerebko comes out of the witness protection program. Avery Bradley caps the comeback with a game-winning three to steal it from the Cavaliers.
Inbound into the hands of Smart. 8, 7, 6 seconds to go in a tie game. Smart against LeBron, left side. Avery open three, kicks in with 1/10 of a second remaining. It hit every corner of the cylinder and the rim. It bounced in, and Avery Bradley, who won a game here last year, found himself wide open to shoot a three. The Cavs have to get the ball in the length of the floor. They won't, and the Boston Celtics have redefined stealing a playoff game.
That's true. Celtics radio, they call that a lucky bounce, but who cares? Not when you have a 21-point lead. Call that what you want. Celtic pride, Cavalier apathy. But I'll tell you what that was. Pretty amazing that a team that got clowned in its own barn had the ability to get back off the mat after losing its best player and stealing a win in the queue, a place that is not easy to win. Look, I know that I've given the Celtics, or now that I've given them some credit, let me just go ahead and take it back now. Cleveland obviously has no business losing that game. No business letting these guys hang around, giving them a reason to believe, and then prolonging the inevitable. Up 21, at home, facing a team without its best player. They looked like they were going to run the Celtics right out of the gym, just as they did in games 1 and 2. Golden State, meanwhile, is on a mission. They're hammering San Antonio. The last thing Cleveland should be doing is wasting any time or any energy with a squad that's without its best player and has no chance of winning anyway. You got a boot on their throat, choke them out, rest, recover, do it again in game 4, and get ready to defend your title against the Warriors. The Cavaliers should know better than this. LeBron should know better than this. But when the Celtics made that comeback, instead of gathering his guys and saying, look, the last thing we should be doing is messing around with these guys, get on my back, I'll get you there so we can get the hell out of here, the King instead just disappears. Had one of the worst playoff games he's ever had. And this during one of the greatest postseasons he's ever had. The guy finished with 11 points and only 3 in the second half when he made only 1 of 9 shots. And there really is no explanation for it other than to say the guy just had a really bad night. It happens, even to one of the best ever. And it's not the first time that's happened to LeBron. It probably won't be the last. And it wasn't about any adjustment that Boston made. It wasn't about anything that Boston did to him. He was just that bad last night. And he admitted as much after the game.
A tough game, period. Not just in the second half. Me personally, I didn't have it. You know, my teammates did a great job of keeping us in the game and building that lead, but me personally, I didn't have it. You know, so, I mean, that's what I got to say about my performance.
Yeah, but that's all he had to say, but he was still being asked about his performance. Because not only was he that bad on the floor, he was almost as bad coming off the floor. First, he gets hooked by a fan in his own building, and then he gets into it with a local radio reporter not long thereafter.
For you, you said, you know, it was just your game. Couldn't get into a rhythm tonight. Is that what it was based on their defense or just not feeling it or what?
No, I was just pretty poor. I mean, what do you want me to say? Yeah. Seemed like you only answer. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. Always come around when we lose, I swear. Yeah, okay.
Hey, listen, it's only one game. He had one bad night, and he was frustrated. But that guy, of all guys, should not be getting hooked by his own fans and local media. Not at this juncture of his career. Nah, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. And if he gets a little fuel from it, better yet, I'm just surprised that happened at all. This guy should not be wasting time and energy on stuff like that. Just as the Celtics, or as the Cavs, should not have wasted all that time and energy last night in not finishing the Celtics when they had the chance. Especially since it looked like they had thrown the switch and were no longer the guys who were blowing all those late leads late in the season. But then again, credit where credit's due, I guess. And this is why before the series I said I had way too much respect for the Celtics and Isaiah Thomas and Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge to say that they would be swept. I mean, sure, I said they'd lose in five, but there's no way you can sweep a proud team like that. So I'm going to stay with my prediction. But truth be told, it should have been a sweep. And if LeBron had shown up and handled his business, it would have been a sweep. And now lots more questions. Howard Beck is my guest. Howard, good to have you back. How are you?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for doing it. So, Howard, let me start here. Cleveland up by 21 in the third quarter. Boston playing without Isaiah Thomas. How surprised are you then that you are back? We're having a conversation about the Celtics coming back on the road and winning a game after getting blown out the way they were in the first two games.
I mean, any answer other than I'm a little shocked would be dishonest. But at the same time, every time we have one of these, not just this year, not just this team, this series, but, you know, these things happen, Jim. It's the reason that we watch. It's, you know, that's the unexpected. Things happen sometimes. Sometimes a team plays better without its best player because everybody shifts into another gear. Sometimes a team that is rolling as hard as Cleveland was rolling just kind of, you know, lets its foot off the gas. Sometimes LeBron James, as great as he is and as incredible a postseason as he's having, can have an off night, which he did. And so, you know, we'll put it in context and they'll win this series. They'll probably win it in five. And years from now, we'll remember that weird night when the Cavs had this, you know, just team-wide collapse and gave a game away. But it's significant in the long run. I think if nothing else, though, it's given us and given the Celtics maybe some insight into what else they have. You know, that team performed differently without Isaiah Thomas. And I don't want to get into the whole idea of like, oh, are they better off without him? And, you know, that gets kind of silly. But it did show how they could be different to take on a little bit different look offensively, defensively, which is all part of what they have to consider going forward because of the obvious. They've got the top pick in the draft. You know, Isaiah's a free agent in a year from now. So it may end up being more significant for how the Celtics view themselves than how the Cavaliers view themselves.
Howard Beck joining us. All right, so let's go back to LeBron for a minute. He obviously had a bad night. That'll happen even to a guy like that. But then, Howard, there's this report in the USA Today about an incident where after the game, a fan got into it with LeBron for scoring just 11. I mean, you'd think that bringing a title to Cleveland last year would mean that LeBron would never hear anything ever again from anybody in Cleveland, but you're around NBA fans all the time, so are you surprised by this?
You know, I mean, I'd want to get his, like, blood alcohol level test, right, if I could, you know, can we like, request that first? I mean, I'm going to guess that might have had something to do with it. I don't know who the individual was. I don't know what they were doing before this incident, but let's just assume that somebody probably was having too good of a time. And yeah, you're absolutely right. After ending Cleveland's half century plus drought of championships in any sport on any level, all the way down to Pee Wee football, I think they, you know, you probably should just give LeBron a pass now and then, you know. But this speaks to something else, which is that Cleveland's arena, the setup there is unique. I'd have to think part about it, but I'm pretty sure it's the only one that has this. Well, when the players come off the court, there's all these fan areas where, I don't know if it's just the big spenders or whoever, but there's fans are in the same corridors as the players as they're going back and forth from the locker room to the press conference area. And I've always thought it was kind of strange, and it allowed for something like this to happen. I don't think that could have happened in any other arena.
Clones, can I talk to you for 1 minute about Ferguson? Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Howard Beck joining us. He's a senior NBA writer at Bleacher Report. Now, the regular season, Howard, for the Cavaliers and LeBron, it was not easy, and he didn't seem like he was always having fun. But then you had a piece on him, and he certainly found another gear. They went to another level. What happened at the very end of the, well, at the start of the playoffs that enabled them to play the way they did? You're not supposed to be able to throw the switch. Was it that or something else?
I don't know, Jim. It's interesting. I mean, I still, you know, the piece you're alluding to, you know, I was writing about just the joy of LeBron, that LeBron is that rare guy who could dominate at his level, be the best player in the game. You know, MVP or no MVP, he can be the best player in the game, dominate his era, and have fun, have those joyful moments of the grabbing the beer spontaneously from the vendor walking by in the first round, and just these little moments where he's able to enjoy it. And I think that comes out when he's relaxed and feeling like, I've got this, we've got this, I know where we're headed. And so whatever bedeviled them in the late season, in the last couple of months, where they're 29th in defense and where, you know, we all started to wonder, are they vulnerable, which seems laughable now. Whatever it was, they took care of it. Now, whether that was just needing the focus of the postseason to get them to where they needed to go, whether that was, you know, guys getting healthy, chemistry falling into place because they'd made so many changes. I mean, we forget about, you know, Kyle Korver joined them, what, I think in, you know, mid-January, whenever it was, and then Deron Williams joined them after the trade deadline, after the buyout season goes through. They had all these different things going on. You know, Love had missed a bunch of games in the season. J.R. Smith had been out for months in the season. It's just probably the most whole and cohesive they've been. That probably has something to do with it. And, you know, you lock in on an opponent, Indiana, which was not a great playoff team, and then Toronto, which proved to be a much lesser opponent than some of us thought they might be. That helps, too. And so it's a lot of things that are coming together. And I still wonder in the back of my mind, as I always do this time of year, what's going to happen when they see the Warriors? Because nobody they face in the East, nobody that you could face in the NBA, period, has anything like the firepower, obviously, of Golden State.
All right, so what is going to happen when they meet each other? Because, I mean, even after last night, Howard, I think we know that's exactly how that's going to go. We'll get the trilogy. It's what everybody wants. Based on the way they're both playing right now, who do you like in that series, and what is going to happen?
Well, you know, it's always been the Warriors because, you know, as good as Cleveland is, and yes, they beat them in the championship last year. Again, let's remember context. The Warriors had that 3-1 lead, and if not for Draymond Green's suspension, you know, that thing probably, in most people's eyes, ends in 5 or 6 with the Warriors winning it. And even in Game 7, it goes down to the last minute. And that's not to diminish the Cavaliers' accomplishment whatsoever. They earned it. But it's not like they blew them off the court. And the Warriors added Durant, and the Cavaliers added, you know, Kyle Korver and Deron Williams. I mean, it's just what the Warriors have constructed is possibly the most talented lineup in the history of the game. Between Curry and Durant alone, not to mention Draymond Green, one of the most versatile players we've ever seen, and then Klay Thompson shooting. I just don't know how you deal with that, how any team deals with that. I think it'll be a battle. I think it's going to be a phenomenal series, but I absolutely think that the Warriors are going to be favored.
Howard, one topic before I let you go. You were at the NBA lottery last week, and you were actually in the sequester room where it all goes down. Who is in that room, and what's the vibe like in that room?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun because you see the drama unfold in a whole different way because you're watching the ping pong balls bounce around and it's a 4-ball combination. So one ball comes up, you don't know anything. Second ball comes up, okay, now it's you're looking at these charts of all these number combinations. So it's very tense. And I was off to the side with a few other media members. And you could watch Rob Pelinka, the GM of the Lakers. You could watch Steve Pagliuca, one of the co-owners of the Celtics, and you could just see everybody just fixated on that machine, waiting for those the ball to pop up. And Pelinka in particular, man, he was just locked in on that thing. He was very tense. And then the Celtics get the first four-ball combination that puts them in the number one spot. Steve Pagliuca from the Celtics is exulting. And it's just an interesting way of watching it. And actually, the video's online. I don't know exactly where online, NBA.com somewhere, but they have posted the video. So you can see, and for all the conspiracy theorists out there, you can see how impossible this thing is to rig. And there's, a good 30 people in the room, too, watching this unfold. So it's an interesting way of watching it. It's definitely rather tense for those involved.
Go back to that last point really quickly, Howard, before you go. No sooner than that thing ended, the conspiracy theorists did jump right in. The Celtics get the first pick. The Lakers get the second pick. Fix. You saw this thing. And with the system being what it is and the way they run this thing, is there any way that anybody or anything could fix that even if they wanted to?
Not a chance, Jim. I mean, you've got all these witnesses in the room. You've got Ernst & Young, the accounting firm, overseeing it all. You've got these ping pong balls. It's not like a ping pong ball is your ball. And so people say, oh, you could weight the balls. No, there's 14 balls with 14 numbers on them, and there's 1,000 combinations, four-ball combinations. So, no, you can't possibly rig it. Again, people should go online and watch the video. I know, look, people wonder about it because of who came up first and second, but Boston, because of the trade with Brooklyn, had the highest chance of getting the top pick. How is that supposed to be a surprise? The Lakers, again, they were about where they were supposed to be. So it's people are always going to believe what they want to believe. And if you want to believe in the frozen envelope from way back when with the Knicks, okay, like I could kind of see where people would see that or determine that that could happen. But in this system today, there's not a chance. You can't possibly rig this thing.
Former Detroit Lions great Calvin Johnson admitted that he suffered several concussions during his career, yet somehow it never ended up on injury report. Because, and wait for this, he hid it from the coaches. He told the Detroit Free Press, quote, guys get concussions. They don't tell the coaches. It happens. I don't tell the coach sometimes because I know I got a job to do. The team needs me out there on the field. And sometimes you allow that to jeopardize yourself, but that's just the nature of the world, end quote. Actually, it's the nature of that world. Do whatever you can to stay on the field. Your team needs you. Somebody else is trying to rip your job from you. Do whatever you have to do to stay on the field and play through whatever you're dealing with, including concussions. Because just because it did not end up on an injury report does not mean that it didn't happen. Hell, Tom Brady's wife, his own wife, said last week that TB12 suffered a concussion. And that was news to everybody, including the team and Brady's own agent who denied it. So the fact is, brain trauma is always going to be a part of that game. Dudes that big and that strong slamming into each other will always cause the brain to slam off the skull. The league obviously knows this and has known about this. And while it waited too long to do anything about this, it finally did get around to addressing the issue. But real change probably is not going to result until the culture of playing through and self-reporting injuries does. And as long as guys are suffering concussions and trying to hide it from the team, you're probably not going to see real change. And as long as the stakes are that high and contracts are not fully guaranteed and dudes are fighting for their livelihood and their piece of the life and players' toughness is questioned when they come off the field, that issue is always going to be there. For there to be real change, the players got to report it. I mean, sure, having spotters up above looking for it is better than nothing, but it's not a foolproof solution. And if a player doesn't say anything, there's a pretty good chance that it won't be discovered. I mean, I would love to know. I would love for somebody to tell me the percentage of guys playing in the NFL right now that have suffered a concussion and did not tell anybody. Or suffered a concussion and maybe just considered it a ding or getting their bell rung and didn't even think anything of it. What percentage of guys playing right now have suffered a concussion and never said anything or thought anything about it? I mean, if you had to put a number on that, what would that be? A quarter of the league? Half the league? More than half the league? And it's hard to help these guys if they're not willing to help themselves. But it's easy to see why they don't say anything. Self-reporting is getting better, But it's clear that there is a long, long way still to go. And I can see where these guys don't. Not when it's been hammered into them since the day they started playing. Stay on the field. Don't come off the field. Not when someone's trying to rip their job. Not when the contracts aren't guaranteed. And not when they're fighting for a piece of the life. And trying to get their family a piece of the life. You can see why it happens. But I would love to know that. How many guys playing in the NFL right now have suffered a concussion and not said anything? Not ended up on an injury report ever? I got a better question. How many guys in the NFL haven't ended up on an injury report after suffering a concussion? It's got to be like half the league, right? Or more? And that's not all. He was also in the news. And again, he had a conversation with the Detroit Free Press. Like, exactly what does this guy have to show for concealing concussions? And he made it sound like it was plural, not just one. So you've got a guy going out there and playing the game, getting his brain beaten in, literally. And what's he have to show for it? Well, I'm not sure all that much. I mean, he got paid, certainly. But we're talking about a guy who's got a bad feeling of this team that he played for, that he did all that for. And things did not end well. I'm sure that most in the NFL have gone back on the field when they had no business doing so. I'm not saying that he's alone in that regard. I'm sure there are lots of guys in the NFL that have gone back on the field at some point when they had no business doing so. He did, and he did it in part for the team. So, how does the team repay him? By apparently jamming him for the prorated version of a signing bonus when he retired. Something that Megatron apparently says still bothers him. Now, he won't come right out and say that's what it is, but he does say that when his career ended, things did not end well between he and the team. Quote, "I don't even like to talk to the Lions too much, just because the way our relationship ended. If they see me around here, we'll see. But hey, I don't know. I just didn't feel like I was treated the way I should have been treated on the way out. That's all. I mean, it's all good. I'm not tripping. I don't feel any kind of way. Just, hey, that's what they did. Hey, it is what it is." Yeah, when a guy says he's not tripping, he's tripping. Safe to assume, whenever somebody goes, hey, I'm not tripping, they're tripping. And the reason he's tripping is because he had to pay them back. When he retired, when he called it a day, he had to pay them back. He had to scratch them a check for more than $300,000. The prorated version of a signing bonus that he got, but did not complete the contract. So they wanted that money back. You know, when they pay all that money up front. It is what it is. It's a sign. I'll tell you what that is. That's a sign to anybody who's drafted by the Lions or thinking about signing there as a free agent. That if they could do that to one of their best players ever and a possible Hall of Famer, they sure as hell can do it to you and to you and to you. Especially when teams generally do not ask for that money back in that situation. But they had no trouble doing it, and they had no trouble doing it to one of their best players ever. I mean, are you kidding me with that? That's unbelievable.
That's unbelievable!
That dude deserves better. And much lesser players have been treated better than he was in other places. I mean, that really is unbelievable.
That's unbelievable!
Hey, Megatron, thanks for everything. Hey, listen, you owe us $300,000. Thanks for putting yourself out there. Thanks for getting concussed and not telling us. Thanks for doing everything you could to make us a better team. Thank you for being a great Lion. Give us our money back. Give us $300,000. You're the best player we've ever had, not named Barry Sanders. Where's our money? Leader in receptions, receiving yardage, touchdowns. I mean, an all-time great player. And things did not end well there. That's too bad. Tyler Kepner is my guest. Tyler, good to have you back on. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. All right, so Mike Trout comes to New York to play the Mets this weekend. And Tyler, he does what he does. He hits 500 for the series. He has a home run, a double, four runs batted in, five walks, and a stolen base. And he's currently hitting 350. He's in the top three in the American League in eight different categories. I mean, I want to talk about his star power in a minute, but how ridiculous is he as a player? And the fact that that seems normal for him at 25, it's not surprising at all.
Yeah, it is insane how good he is, and he's been so consistent at this level. He hasn't had a bad year, doesn't feel like he's ever had a bad month. I mean, he's one or two in the MVP every year of his career. He's only 25. He's got every tool you could want. And he's already, I mean, you know, traditional stats, advanced stats, any way you look at it, he's great. I mean, he's already got more wins above replacement, if you believe in that stat, than Kirby Puckett or Jim Rice or Lou Brock. I mean, all kinds of Hall of Famers, and he's only 25. It's hard to overstate just how good he is.
I was going to say, and on top of all that, we're talking about the youngest player in baseball history to reach 150 home runs and 150 stolen bases. In five full seasons, as you mentioned, he's been the AL MVP twice. He's been the runner-up three times. So exactly what are we witnessing here?
We're witnessing the best player we've seen in a long time. You know, it's a combination of offense, defense at a premium position, high average, high on base. I mean, he just gets better. I mean, he's learning now to attack more balls early in the count, you know, and just jump on pitchers' mistakes. He's the more pitches he sees, the more he understands patterns. I mean, he's tremendous. I mean, there's really no downside to him. We are seeing hit history. If we're watching it, we're seeing a historic player here, one of the best maybe of all time.
Tyler Kepner joining us. Now, when you're putting up the kind of numbers that he is at the plate, and then you add in the speed on the base pass and the way he plays in the outfield, you'd think that he would be a household name and the face of the sport. Now, as you wrote in your piece in the New York Times, he's, quote, LeBron James in spikes, Tom Brady out of shoulder pads. The only thing missing then are championship rings and a brand. How concerning is that lack of a brand for him and for the sport?
Well, I think for him, he doesn't really concern himself with it. I mean, if you're Mike Trout, everything's going pretty well, except for the fact that your team's not in the playoffs. But basically, you've got a great life. You're playing a sport you love in a place you love. Your personal life seems like it's great. There's no incentive, really, in Mike's mind to go out there and you know, promote himself or say controversial things or maybe force the issue with the Angels to try to do more, let's say, to give him a winner. Life's going pretty good for Mike Trout, and he tries to keep it simple. I think from baseball standpoint, they would love it if maybe he put himself out there a little more, maybe if he participated in some of their showcase events. Obviously, it's not his fault they're not going to the postseason, and he does great when he plays in All-Star games, but you know, he's not in the Home Run Derby. He's not in the World Baseball Classic. He's not in as many commercials as he could be, but that's a personal choice. And, I mean, if Mike Trout's lack of star power is a problem. I guess Mike could do a little more about it, but for him personally, he just thinks things are going fine, and he's not interested in branding himself. This is not a value for him.
You know, and on top of that, he's just not a look-at-me guy. There's nothing about him that says, look at me. So having said that, how would you compare his image and his approach to being a star with, say, Bryce Harper's image and his approach?
Well, they're very different guys, and they're always going to be compared. You know, there's a lot more to talk about with Bryce. He'll speak his mind a little more. He has more opinions, I think, about things out there. He's willing to share them sometimes. And he's more brash. I mean, he plays with an edge. You know, he has a little bit more of a showmanship aspect to him. You know, he wants to be out there more. He's got a personal logo, a brand. He's got the free agency coming after next season, so that's a big topic. You know, and he's been groomed for that since he was 16. And I think Trout just was simply groomed to be a ball player and nothing more. So they're very different people, different codes, all that. But I think it comes down more to just who's more comfortable and who seeks the spotlight a little more. And I think that's Harper. I think he brings that edge that Trout doesn't have. Like you say, there's nothing about Mike that really draws you to look at him. He doesn't have a crazy haircut. He doesn't do anything weird with his uniform. He doesn't have tattoos. He's just a ball player who goes out and plays. And there's no real strategy behind how he deals with you. He's the same guy as he was as a rookie.
Tyler Kepner, my guest. So one more thought about that. I mean, what if he had a ring? Would it really change anything at all? You point out LeBron and Brady have their rings. So would winning a World Series change that for Mike Trout, or would he still be nowhere close to their level of fame even with that ring?
Well, that's a good question, because I think you look at the guys who have the jersey sales. A lot of them this year were the Cubs. I think the Cubs had four of the top five jerseys, and a lot of, you know, Buster Posey's up there, and he's got some more commercials and stuff. But I still think it does often come down to how you market yourself. It'd be great if we all got to see Trout in the World Series and have a good extended postseason run year after year, you know, the way Jeter did. But I still remember a guy like Griffey in the early part of his career. He was on an obscure West Coast team and didn't make the postseason for a long time, and he still had that star power kind of just because he was able to cross over into pop culture. He was willing to put himself out there and something about Griffey's personality connected with a lot more people. So if you put him in the World Series, I think, yeah, he would get more attention during the World Series and during the postseason. But then it'd go back to being a guy who plays at 10 o'clock, 10:30 on the East Coast who's not really self-promoting. So I don't know how much it really would change other than during October.
Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, Tyler, if I told you before the season that in late May the Yankees would be in first in the AL East and the Mets would be six games below 500, what would you have said?
I just said, what happened to our storyline, man? This is supposed to be the Mets' time to be the number one team here in New York, and the Yankees to be, restructuring. But maybe we underestimated the Yankees and how quickly Aaron Judge would develop, into a star. You knew for Judge that it was there. You just didn't know if it would come out, because he had so many strikeouts last year specifically. And with the Mets, I mean, it's just the same old thing with their injuries. They can't stay on the field. And it's a combination of bad luck and maybe just a bad culture where, these things fester, these problems become worse than they can be. And a guy like Matt Harvey is maybe through his own lack of priorities, just letting his own star diminish a little bit. He's had injuries too. So everything that's going wrong with the Mets, they thought they had depth and they don't. And their position players are old and somewhat one-dimensional. So maybe we should have seen it coming, but I thought the Mets were a playoff team, and I thought the Yankees were going to be a team in transition. So it caught a lot of us by surprise.
I was going to say, I saw it the same way. So one final thought then. Brian Cashman, he has been running things in New York for the last two decades. No other top executive in baseball has been with their team as long, and this guy's doing it in New York. So what do you make of his run in New York and the job that he's done with this current rebuild in particular?
Yeah, I think it's tough because I think there's a part of Brian that would love to be able to have the freedom to just let it all, to a couple years ago, let's say, to have let it all go down to the studs, like, the Cubs or the Astros did, and just build it all back up with all the resources you can have when you finish last. He's never been able to do that, so he's kind of been, he really had to take advantage last year to make some moves, and he did. I think this is what Brian's wanted to do all along, is get younger, clear out some of the older guys, and then reinvest when the big boys come on the free agent market in a couple of years. You'll see them back out there in a big way when Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and all those guys hit the market. The Yankees are still the Yankees, but they had to get leaner, and Cashman's been preaching that for years. Leaner, younger. He made some really good deals to get Castro and Didi up the middle for pretty much nothing. It's always a mix, and who gets credit in New York? But I think Brian's doing it the way he wants to do it now, and it's showing.
Every show has this one moment. Literally every show that I've ever done has this one moment. This happens every single show. Sadly, sometimes there are three or four moments like this per show. But every show has one moment. That clones, please stop. Even you are better than this moment. I have this moment every time I do this show. And we've reached that point once again. Clones, stop. Even you are better than this. You probably even know what I'm referring to. All right, so what's out there? What's out there that you are all yapping about, commenting on, that I have not brought up, that I really had no intention of bringing up, but you leave me no choice? This headline, quote, "Big game hunter killed after dead elephant falls on top of him." Why you see a story like that and you think of me, I have no idea. That's not what this show's about. That's not what my brand is about. That's not who I am. That's not what I do. Yet you see a story like that and you can't wait to get it to me. Why do you see something like that and think, oh, hey, honey, where's my phone? I got to thumb out a tweet to Rome about that guy who got flattened dead by the elephant. Rome wants that. Rome is asking for that. Rome's not asking for that. Rome doesn't want that. Rome is so aggravated he's talking in the third person. Rome does not want that crap on this show. Yet there it is. Mike D for three. He tweets, RIP, flattened by elephant guy. Gotta stay on top of those things like I did when I harpooned that whale. Signed, Tom Arnold. I don't even know what that means, nor do I care. I don't know, maybe it's me. I just don't really find humor in a guy getting flattened and killed by an elephant that he was hunting. So for the last time, this is not jungle karma. How is that jungle karma? Did I know that guy? Did the guy who lost his life, tragically so, was he on this show? Did he say that he would be on this show and then not attend or appear on the show? Did he disrespect the show? Jungle Karma's got nothing to do with that. Keep Jungle Karma out your mouth. That's not Jungle Karma. And before you think about bringing this up, yes, I saw that sea lion pull that little girl into the water in British Columbia. I'm happy to say nobody got hurt. Not the little girl, not the sea lion, not the adult who foolishly left the little girl on the edge or the ledge where that sea lion could get up, grab her dress, and drag her into the water. Nobody got hurt. Not even the idiot with the camera who refused to put down the iPhone or his Frappuccino to help the girl, but had to stay with the shot. Had to stay with the shot. That's not Jungle Karma either. Yeah, I mean, I do have a take or two on these things, but it's not for the program. I'll tell you who's not to blame in that. The freaking sea lion. All right? It's a sea lion doing what a sea lion might do. It's a sea lion that's probably hungry. It's a sea lion swimming right up to the ledge. Who's going to leave a little girl with a dress? You know, loose-fitting clothing, maybe? That's hanging over the edge when there's a sea lion at the edge? And you're just going to sit there as a parent and leave that little girl there. Meanwhile, the authorities. That's how that sounded. Oh my God is right. In the meantime, a spokesperson for the harbor authority in the area blamed it on the parents. Quote, "You certainly shouldn't be letting your girl sit on the edge of the dock with her dress hanging down after the sea lion has already snapped at her once." Quote, "You wouldn't go up to a grizzly bear in the bush and hand him a ham sandwich. So you shouldn't be handing a 1,000-pound wild animal in the water slices of bread. You can only spend so much time protecting people from their reckless behavior. We've now seen an example of why it's illegal to do this and why it's dangerous and frankly stupid to do this." Take that for data. And the guy's right. There's nothing about that that's unfair or untrue. You're feeding a sea lion. A sea lion. It's got lion in its name. That sea lion is hungry. That sea lion is looking at the bread and seeing the little girl. You think he might help himself to the other? He did. Dragged her right into the water. But then again, credit where credit's due to that legend who refused to drop his iPhone and help. He was not giving up that shot. Not dropping the Frappuccino that he paid $5 for and not dropping the phone where he was going to get that viral shot of a little girl who could have lost her life. No, we're not talking about this stuff, clones. We are not talking about this. I want to talk about Pop and Zaza. Hey, Rome, of course that guy didn't put down his Frappuccino. Those things were like $7. Stan and Beaverton. Yeah, I know, Stan. I know. Yeah, but while that thing might be like $7, the shot that he had to stay with, priceless. Priceless. The most important video of that guy's life, I'm telling you. What kind of world do we live in? How big of a loser would you have to be not to drop your phone when something like that went down? You've got to see the video to believe it. I mean, the sea lion gets up and grabs her dress and pulls her right into the drink. I mean, it's terrifying. She falls into the water, but notice, not out of frame. Not out of frame. Dude's probably trying to figure out how to get like a panoramic video shot. This is it, man. This is my moment. This is my Pulitzer moment. I'm going to get this shot. She gets pulled into the water and homeboy's setting up lighting. Way to go. Hey. The boom is in the shot. The boom is in the shot. Stay with it. Stay with it. You get that? Oh, I got it. Wardrobe, makeup. Hey, listen, can we dry her off? Can we do that one more time? It's not perfect. It's good. It's very good, but it's not perfect. Hey, run this back. Humor me. Humor me. Do this for me. Can we get one more shot? Can we get one more shot? Sweetie, can you yell a little bit louder this time? Hey, can I get a refill on this Frappuccino, please? Please? What's a guy have to do to get some more frap? You've had your fun. Keep moving. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you. Hit subscribe if you have not done so already. If you could tell a friend, that'd be great. Trust the podcast. Check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We will see you then. We're out.
Emails.
I got hooked by Flan. Denville, Washington. Not Denzel, but Denville.